Hey guys, Brian Mendler here. Super excited that my one-day workshop coming to 14 cities open to the public. So if you're an administrator, get a bunch of teachers, send them to these cities. I got October 23rd, Memphis, Tennessee, one of my favorite places. I love Memphis. The next day, the 24th, we are in Savannah, Georgia. Full days, again, 8:30 in the morning till 3 in the afternoon. All sorts of info on your most challenging students. November 13th, we got Sioux Falls. The 14th is Omaha. November 15th is Des Moines, Iowa. Then November 19th, Houston, Texas. Houston, one of my favorite places. I'll be back in Columbus on November 20th and Cleveland, Ohio on the 21st. Then we take a little Thanksgiving break after that. And then after Thanksgiving, we come back North Chicago, Illinois. I'll be there on December 3rd, Joliet, Illinois. If you're anywhere near Joliet, we got you on December 4th. And I'll be in Champaign, the home of the Fighting Illini, on December 5th. Excited for you guys. And then close to my hometown, December 10th, I got Binghamton, New York. December 11th, I'll see you guys in Syracuse. And December 12th in Buffalo. All one-day workshops. Register brianmendler.com. Go to brianmendler.com. Private message me on Twitter, on Instagram, on any social media sites for large groups, and I'll help you with special pricing. I hope to see you guys there. Hey guys, today's episode brought to you by my subscription service, MendlerU. For just $5 a month, you have unlimited access to my video professional development catalog and library containing over 60 videos and bonus podcasts and segments from every guest that I bring on. Each week, I add new content for the most inspiring, up-to-date strategies and tips for working with your most challenging and difficult students. Visit brianmendler.com right now and subscribe to MendlerU.
Ladies and gentlemen, from Rochester, New York, it's time for the Brian Mendler Show. Introducing your host, fighting for kids everywhere, Brian, that one kid, Mendler.
What is up, everybody? Brian Mendler back in your life on this Monday, September 30th, 2019. And I'm super excited to be joined by my friend in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, correct?
Correct.
Tracy Vick. Trace, how you doing? It's good to see you.
I'm doing great. It's good to see you too.
And I wish everybody could see behind you. They call you the Packer principal because her office is literally, I won't say littered, but covered in Packer gear and paraphernalia, correct?
That is true. That is true. I've got quite a bit of Packer gear in here. There's no doubt about it.
Have you been Packer crazed your whole life?
Pretty much, yes.
Pretty much. Like, from how did you get into it? Did you like dad, like family, like whole head?
My stepdad loves the Packers, but my biological dad loves the Broncos. So I kind of grew up loving them both. But then, if you remember, in the mid '80s, the Broncos really struggled for a while there, and for some reason, I just leaned towards the Packers then. And I'm a pretty crazed fan at this point in my life, obviously. I even have a Cheesehead sombrero behind me.
How awesome is that?
Yeah, and I'm married to a Vikings fan, so it like makes things real fun at our house.
Right, I forgot that. That's right. You're married to a Vikings fan who's also in education, correct?
Yeah, he's our assistant superintendent of finance for the district here, so business manager and all things money-wise.
So he gets to, anytime you, no wonder your school is so amazing. You just get to go to your hubby and be like, hey, break out another 1,000, buddy.
If only it worked that way. My husband is such a rule follower that he's like, you have to go ask the superintendent. Actually, I get it a little bit. He's a little tougher on me when it comes to that. Besides, he watches the finances at school and at home. I get no break, Brian.
No breaks. I'll tell you. So it's good to have you. I got to visit your school. Well, we go way back. I mean, we actually go back probably a good like 10 to 12 years. How did we first, do you remember how we first hooked up, you and me?
Yeah, I was working as a professional development coordinator here for the Sioux Falls School District and had gone to a session that you had. It was one of your very first ones, you know?
Yeah, I was brand new at it. I still had hair.
Yeah, you did.
I had hair at that time.
And so you were presenting out at the convention center here in Sioux Falls. And a couple of years later, I had started the Educator Summer Symposium here in Sioux Falls, and we brought you in as our keynote speaker. And you provided the keynote and then lots of sessions all day. And so we had spent a couple of days together and really kind of became, you know, good friends and acquaintances. And and then, you know, you went off and continued writing books. And I left professional development and was a middle school assistant principal for a couple of years. Well, for 4 years before our superintendent asked me to move down to the elementary level and work with our Spanish immersion program here in Sioux Falls.
Right. And that's, of course, what you do now is so Tracy's school is one of the most beautiful that I've ever been. It's pretty new, correct?
Yeah. We're just in year four. So it looks, brand new still, which is awesome.
Yeah, I know. And I got a tour. I think it was about a year ago. You took me around there and it was great. So when you say Spanish immersion school, can you explain to people what does that mean exactly?
Yeah, what that means is we're a 90-10 model in Spanish immersion. And so our students they have to be fluent in English to come to our school. And parents have to agree to be the primary teachers of English up and through second grade. All of our teachers are fluent in Spanish. They have to pass a Spanish proficiency test. And so all of our classroom core content is taught, it's delivered in Spanish. So we don't teach Spanish like this is have a flashcard, this is red and rojo. You know, we don't teach it that way. We teach the content in Spanish. And so our classroom teachers never speak English in front of their students from day one. So the teachers speak Spanish, the kids are all understand English. Some kids, of course, because of older siblings in our program or going to a Spanish immersion daycare, or maybe having someone in the family speaking Spanish. Some of them understand some Spanish, but we, which is really nice because if the teacher's saying en la fila, the one kid can say, hey, they want you to get in line, or she wants you to get in line and right now. Or so our students come in speaking little to no Spanish. The teachers only speak Spanish to them. We introduce English to them in third grade. And so in third grade, they get 55 minutes of English instruction, and we really focus on vocabulary, sentence structure, some of the things that are and different in English than Spanish, like capitalization is very different between the two languages. But our students are expected to take the same statewide exams, you know, like Smarter Balanced and the MAP in English. And so we know those start in third grade, at least the Smarter Balance assessment does. That's why we start English in third grade. So,
okay. I have a couple questions through some things that you said. So first, my first thought is it's got to be really hard to find teachers. Like that process must be very difficult if they have to be fully Spanish immersed. I mean, they have to basically Spanish has to be a huge part of their life to teachers. So do you have and you're in Sioux Falls. So I don't equate Sioux Falls. It's not, you're not in Brooklyn or the Bronx where like you have people, you know what I mean? Where you have all different kind of, I mean, maybe you do a little bit in Sioux Falls, but so, you know, it's rural. I mean, even though it's a city in South Dakota, it's still not a big city. There's like five flights a day. I always judge everything by flights. And I always know when I go to Sioux Falls, I'm like, it's like never simple to get there. So how do you go about that? What's the process? And is that a tough thing?
It is definitely not a tough thing, which is surprising. In the early years, it was. It was. Especially people are like, you want me to go where? Sioux Falls, South Dakota? You know what I mean? It's like that wasn't even in a lot of people's schema. But this is our 12th year in existence. And so our oldest group of kids are now 11th graders. And just by word of mouth from our teachers, we get a lot of applications. I usually, when I have an open position, I usually get anywhere between 60 and 100 applications.
I'm shocked by this.
I know, right?
Shocked.
I would have
never in a million years guessed that.
Yeah. When we have open positions for English speaking special education teachers, we don't get that many applications, but for Spanish we do. And one of the reasons is that we have an intern program here. We go through Amity Institute out of San Diego, and it's an intern program where we have Spanish-speaking college students who are studying education. So they're either in their first year or their last year of an education program or graduated within a year of a program, either their bachelor's or a master's degree. And our parent group fundraises money to have these Spanish-speaking interns come for a year. So they're like a cross between a student teacher and a foreign exchange student, but they're adults. They're between the ages of 21 and 29.
Coming from where, though?
This year, we only have that. We have them from three countries, but they're coming from Spanish-speaking countries. So Amity Institute does all the background checks. Amity Institute gets the J-1 visa for them. And we do interviews, see if they fit, if their personality would look like it would fit with us. And they come and spend 10 months here. They stay with a host family. So they come to school when the kids come to school and go home at the end of the day with the families.
That's cool.
They come and they go.
Talk about relationship building, though, right? I mean, that's built into the whole system of it.
Right, right. It's just, it's awesome. But then they've been here for 10 years. So it's almost like or 10 months. It's almost like a 10-month interview, Brian. I get to go in. I get to watch them interact with kids, yeah. with staff. Many of them are shocked when they come from Spain or from Colombia or Chile and they witness South Dakota winter. You know, we go outside at 0 degrees for recess. When it's sub-zero, we don't go outside. So when it starts to get colder, you know, like 30 degrees, you know, we're hardy here in South Dakota. We still go out for recess.
Oh, yeah.
When it's 30
Same
degrees
here.
Out.
We're upstate
like,
New York.
It's
right.
crazy.
We don't play. I mean, we go outside. It's suck it up, kid. You're good.
That's right. Yeah. And so
otherwise you live 3/4 of your life inside. If you right? don't have that mentality, then you're never yeah. outside.
October to May is a crapshoot when it comes
I have my pool is still open and people are asking me when you're gonna close your pool, and I'm like, not yet. Like I'm waiting till like end of October. Like we keep it nice and warm and we go in there, you know, it doesn't matter. We're good.
Yeah. As long as you can. Right.
Just how fast can we get from the pool to the inside is the question. Yeah. Right. Cause that's the little spot that's freezing. It's like when you have a hot tub.
No, yeah. no doubt. So, our interns, then they do everything that a student teacher would do, work with small groups. They work throughout the building. So they have 10 months of exposure to our students and our staff, building relationships with kids, and I get to watch them teach all the time. So I can't recruit them, any of those interns, straight from being an intern. They all have to go back home as per their J-1 visa. So they all have to go home for at least a year. But then after that, I can interview them. And I already know them. I know that, you know,
if you want them, can you just bring them over? Or is there like, is that a whole production?
We're so lucky here in Sioux Falls. Becky Dorman is our human resource director. And she had two children in this program. They're both, one's in middle school, one's in high school now. But she does a great job of working with, we have a district lawyer that works with the visa process in getting these teachers over here. And so luckily at the school level, I don't have to do that. But at the district level, they do. We're very fortunate because like just next door in Minnesota, the Minnesota Education Association doesn't allow them to bring teachers in from other countries and give them a visa to teach in Minnesota schools. In South Dakota, we are able to do that. And so they go through.
So it's really a state by state thing.
Absolutely.
People can even do this.
Yeah.
What's their
sure.
reasoning? Do they have reasoning for not? Like what?
Well, don't take those jobs away from Minnesota folks.
Really great. Takes jobs away from our America, you know, from people that are here, I guess would be the argument.
Right. That is what it is. And the thing is that a high school Spanish teacher can't necessarily teach Spanish immersion. You know, we've had several who've come and interviewed because they're K-12 Spanish. They've got a high school endorsement. They can teach all the way up through AP. You have to be able to speak all day, every day on all topics academic and otherwise.
It's got to be almost your native language.
Almost. We have 27 classroom teachers this year. And out of the 27, only two are not native speakers. Both were raised in South Dakota, one in Sioux Falls, one in Vermilion, but one studied in Argentina and one studied in Spain. And they both, you know, are they're both very fluent, obviously, because they're teaching here. We, out of those 27 teachers, I have in our program in this building, we have 9 former interns. And it's awesome because when they come, when you hire them, you know, like think about hiring a new teacher from Spain or from Ecuador or Chile, and you bring them in and you're teaching them everything about your school, how the copier works, what you, who do you ask for what, show them the curriculum. When you, when we hire an intern, they come in knowing all that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, they,
are they surprised at all by the, so earlier you said they were surprised. You said, and then you said by the harsh winters. That's not what I thought you were going to say. What I thought you were going to say was they were surprised by some of the behaviors that they see. And that was my next question. Like, what do you see? Do they ever come in and do they ever, what do they say about our system? Like, do they look at that in our system and be like, wow, this is really great? Or they look at it and are like, whoa, I would never talk like that to a teacher. Like, how did that, what, what's the, that would be an interesting thing for me to find out from them.
Yeah, it's, it definitely depends on the country they came from and the type of school that they came from. We have a teacher that, you know, that came from a private Catholic school in her country. She's very, she's much more strict than what others would be, but still loving, because you know me. If you're not going to give your best every day and love up on every kid, no matter what, and start every single day, no matter what yesterday was like, if you're not going to start every day with a clean slate with every kid, then this isn't the place for you. I will do that with kids, and I expect the staff to do that with kids. And so her classroom is set up more traditionally. We got lots of flexible seating, but in her particular classroom, she's more traditional seating. In desks and row, not in rows, it's in a U, so that's, you know, but so her expectations are a little bit differently, but the feeling tone is still there, you know, so I think they get used to it really quickly. You know, I also have high expectations for my students. You're going to be respectful to teachers and to staff, and you know, we're K-5, so that's a lot different than my days working in a middle school. We also, you know, so you know, we deal with that, but yeah, sometimes kids are going to, you know, tell you off and they're going to throw things in your classroom and we're going to take a break.
Is if, like for me, it would be great because they could do it in Spanish and I wouldn't know what they were saying. I would never get offended. Right. I mean, really, kind of like the ultimate goal as a teacher to never get offended is if you didn't know the language. I remember when I went to London to work a few years ago and the bad word was bollocks. You know, and I had never heard that word before. And so, but I was laughing because I'm like, of course, my response is to laugh because if somebody said that, I would laugh. I've never heard that word. Right. And sometimes if you just hear every word like that, like the F word, just pretend you never heard it before and pretend it was like some bunch of letters put together and then it'll keep you from getting offended, you know?
Yeah. Well, and you know, as well as I do, you know, first of all, our teachers all are fluent in English as well, because their kids don't know that. The students don't necessarily know that they're fluent in English, but of course they are. But you know, especially when I was working in middle school, I was.
Are you fluent in both?
No, I know. I mean, really? I've studied a lot of Spanish. I understand a lot more Spanish and I try. I mean, I'll throw things out there and the kids will say, oh, Senora Beak, it's like this. And so I have 700 tutors in this building, which is absolutely
awesome. So they could talk about you and you wouldn't know what was going on a little bit. You'd know a little bit, but they could probably get you, right?
Right. Yeah, maybe some. But you know, after 28 years in working with kids, you can tell by their body language what their intent is. You know what I mean? Oh, yeah. That look on their face, you know pretty well if they're being open and honest with you, or if they're saying something a little, you know, otherwise. So, So the students,
what are some of the struggles that you guys see there? What are some, you know, you have behaviors like everybody else. So is it, do you see a lot of like frustration behaviors, like where kids, you know, can't figure things out, or like, where do you see the root coming from when a lot of, you know?
Yeah, well, in kindergarten, it's tough because, you know, I applaud those kindergarten teachers. I know the gal you were visiting with just yesterday said, I wasn't wired to be a kindergarten teacher, you know, and I can't say that I was maybe wired to be a kindergarten teacher, but I know I wasn't wired to be a kindergarten teacher in a Spanish immersion classroom when the kids don't understand what I'm saying to them. And so the teachers do a lot of reminding, but there are kids who get really frustrated when they don't understand. And it's no different than our ELL population that comes in and the teacher's standing there and speaking in English and the kids are like, I don't understand a word they're saying. The difference is here, all of our students can understand each other, where in our EL classrooms, they don't necessarily understand each other either, because you could have 5 or 10 languages in a classroom and the kids don't speak. So we see some frustration. I mean, I know that we have less behavior referrals than some of our other elementary schools in, however, doesn't mean we don't have any. And we do have kids, you know, that will just, you know, throw some things out there and, or, you know, some severe behaviors. I can't say we haven't.
Of course.
But it's, I would never say that we have it exactly the same. We're 16% free and reduced lunch, where we've got schools here that are 90% or 100% free and reduced lunch. You just have different things. So, you know, I used to do a lot of work, and I still do, you know, presentations and trainings on working with families from a background of poverty. And obviously, you want, when you're working in a school where, you know, 90% of the kids are from poverty, everybody should know the training. But what about when you're in a school where, you know, you're 15% poverty? In that high poverty school, when I come to school and I'm hungry or I'm dirty or I didn't stay at home last night or whatever the case may be, you know, you're frustrated. And I don't want anybody to think that I'm saying that kids are, you know, when I said the dirty part, I remember being a kid from poverty. And one thing with my mom was we were always going to be clean when we went to school. We may be wearing the same clothes day after day, but by George, we were going to be clean. You know, but if I'm going to school at a school that has 90% poverty and I'm coming from poverty and, you know, I have, you know, a mom and a dad and a stepdad and a stepmom and all this kind of chaos in my life, I'm just like everybody else. But when you're a kid that walks into this school and you're coming from poverty, because we have kids who are homeless here, we have kids who, you know, they're living in extreme poverty and parents are fighting hard and working hard to make ends meet. They're not like everybody else. So my teachers need to know how to work differently with that student because they're not the norm. It's easier when everybody around you is exactly the same. But there's very few schools in America where that happens. And so we got to do some serious training.
You said you grew up in poverty. What? Tell me a little bit about that. How did you grow up? Where did you grow up?
I grew up all over. I mean, I have amazing parents. I've told you that before. You know, when we just met last spring, I have amazing parents. It's just that sometimes choices along the way weren't always the greatest. As parents, you know, that happens. So, growing up, I went to, I had 7 different cities that I went to school in. But if you want to talk about homes, we moved 9 times. I ended up in Spearfish, South Dakota, 3 different times. But if you wanted to talk about homes, I moved 19 times, kindergarten through 12th grade. So I was in Madison, South Dakota, Spearfish, South Dakota, Billings, Montana.
Why? Why were you moving so much?
There was always a better opportunity somewhere else, I believe. My dad was a hard worker, but there was just always something a little bit better somewhere else, maybe. And so I think that's it.
Yeah.
You know, I ended up graduating from Upton, Wyoming, but I like to say Spearfish because I had the most years there. When my mom and dad got divorced in 3rd grade, my mom and stepdad lived in Spearfish for a really long time. But they were successful business owners there.
But you didn't stay with them?
No, I didn't. I lived with my dad.
Why?
Because my dad was a teacher and coach in a small town in South Dakota, and he was highly regarded and really popular because, you know, that was awesome. And then a couple of years later, we moved up to Wyoming and he became a cop. So you go from your dad being this awesome teacher and coach, you know, football coach, wrestling coach, track coach, baseball coach, everybody loved. And now all of a sudden he's a town cop. Man, that's a huge crash, you know, for you in popularity. But he and my stepmom had 3 children together. And so, you know, things were always really, really tight. But I loved living in a small town. I graduated with 24 kids. I could be on the basketball team because I wasn't a great athlete, but I was a fun person, you know. Yeah. But I was that kid, Brian, much like you, moving that many times and always having to be the new kid. Man, I thought I needed to be the entertainer. And I was entertaining, and I found really quickly what made me popular with the kids didn't always make me popular with the teachers. And that was a hard balance for me. There were, I mean, I was told my freshman year in high school that I was never going to amount to anything, and that I probably wouldn't graduate from high school, you know. And it wasn't until my junior year in high school that I had an amazing school counselor that said, because I said, well, I'll never go to college. You know, I didn't take school seriously, and I've lived all over the place. And even though my stepdad and my dad were both college graduates, I didn't think I would ever. And he's like, what are you kidding me? He's like, you can go to college. Anybody can go to college. You don't have to be an AP student to go to college. And because I'd always wanted to be a teacher, you know, yeah. But I didn't know that was going to be a possibility for me. And so he really helped me look at things a little bit differently and take things a little bit seriously. And if I would have had him earlier in my life, maybe that could have been a game changer for me. But I had him when I needed to.
I think college is easier than high school. I think it's way easier than high school. Like, you know, college was the first time where I got to like do things I wanted to do, like where I could pick. I remember I talk about this all the time. The one experience I had in college that I'll never forget was the first time I ever took a public speaking class. It was my freshman year of college, and it was pouring rain, like pouring, like you could hear it on the roof. And we all had to give a presentation that night, and I went last, and everybody had given their presentation. Then I got up, and I had no notes, and I had no podium, right? I moved the podium out of the way, and I just went for like, it was supposed to be like 5 minutes, and I went for like 15, and every person in the room was like literally dead focused on what I was saying. And I sat down, I'll never forget this. I sat down in my seat when it was over, and I looked at the sky, and I don't pray, and I'm not super religious, I'm spiritual, but I looked at the sky and I said, that's what it feels like to dominate in school. Like, I just dominated these people. Like, these people were not in my league. And I don't say it arrogantly. I just say it because that was the first time that I realized the feeling. Like, I never had known. That's what my brother felt his whole life in school. His whole life was take a test, boom, just be finished and be the best, right? And I never knew what that was like. And then I got to college, and here was this class where talking was valued. Like, it was always be quiet, stop talking, you know, you're inappropriate, don't be so loud, you're doing this. It was always the message that was sent to me over and over again. And all of a sudden, I'm in this place where they love it, and they want me to do it, and they're teaching me how to do it better. And I remember, like, in those moments, just loving school so much more. Yeah. Like, school was such a better place for me in college than it was in high school. And I say that all the time. And I think it's important for kids to realize that sometimes, and you know, you just got to get through school, like get through it to the other side. And once you get to the other side, the world opens up to you. You can really now focus on the thing you love, you know, and once you do that, you know, like, possibilities are endless, you know? Yeah.
Well, and really encourage, you know, and one of the things I just thought of that, you and I have talked about this, because we're class clowns. We're not afraid to get up and talk in front of people, thinking outside of the box, like being creative. I think that's what made us good teachers, you know, like, or being good educators or training other people. Because like in high school, it's like, here, you can do it this way. Yeah, but you could do it this way, this way, this way, this way, you know, and think of all these ways. And it's like, no, focus. You need to do it this way. And it's like, you know, then you get into teaching and you realize, oh, wait a second. There's a whole lot of kids who think like I do, you know, or I did. And I was told to conform to this little structure or this little box. And that's not how my brain worked. That's not how my energy worked. That's not how my, you know, and so it's like, then all of a sudden, when you could take someone with our personalities and then you put them in front of kids and you get that all of them are different and they need to have multiple pathways and multiple ways to learn. And you can come up with all these creative ideas. That's why I love teaching special education. You know?
But I think that's also the struggle for a lot of teachers, because I think a lot of teachers have that mentality, but they feel like the system is trying to contain them, right? So like, now I'm a teacher and I go in, I got all these ideas and I want to do all these really cool things. And then I'm like, but the test, or but the observation, or but the, and you have to be able to navigate that. I think it's important to, And I think one of the disconnects I noticed between a lot of times administrators and teachers is administrators want teachers to do that. Like, they want teachers to be innovative. They want teachers to think creatively. They want, but most teachers are rule followers. So if they're told to do something a certain way, they do it that way. Even if someone's saying to them, well, do that. Like, for example, I remember when I was teaching and the hat rule, right? You weren't allowed to wear hats in school. It was like this whole big production. Everybody was arguing with kids about hats. And it was just, you got to the point where you would look at the thing and say, do we really want this to be what we're arguing about? Like, you know, but when we empowered kids and we actually, at this school, we had a kid that was, I went in and I said, let's do this thing where we bring in our biggest hat offenders. So we brought in our biggest hat offenders. Kids were always wearing them. And we said, we're willing to negotiate, right? So it was supposed to be no hats ever. We made it where it could be hats only on, we said, if you police your friends Monday through Thursday, we'll allow them on Friday, right? And the kids, they're all sitting in a circle and they look at us, they are like, we want Tuesday and Friday right away. They're negotiating, right? Which, by the way, I was like, well, we just got it from 5 days to 2 days, you know, but negotiation's good, you know?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yes. To a reason. You always got to, then you have the kid who wants to negotiate with everything and you have to set the boundaries with them always.
You do.
Right. But there are things as in your classroom, like you can't, I mean, so many kids don't do well when you walk in and the teacher already has all the class expectations on the wall. Right. This is how we're going to do things. And there's no buy-in. You've got to create that buy-in. I was just in a classroom this morning, second grade classroom, and it was clear the rules and expectations for this class were up on the wall. And it was written on a poster board, written in a child's hand writing, and every kid in the class had signed it. And I know that teacher sits down and says, what do we want the expectations for this classroom to be this year? And then all of the kids, you know, agree to it. And then you've got buy-in because, hey, those are the rules we agreed to, you know, and there's like kind of this system of check and connect with your buddies, you know, too. Hey, we got to listen, you know, we're supposed to be doing this now and we agreed. So, you know, those kind of teachers, and you know, as well as
you got to know which kid, you got to know which kids to really be the ones that you got to agree with out of the group. There's a few where you're like, you guys are kind of calling the shots here. You're like the captains. I'm going to negotiate with you guys. Make sure that this is okay for you or that's okay for you. It's true in society, though. I think people in general are more willing to follow rules that they help create. But it's a power and control thing. That's really what it is. It's about saying, in my life, I want to feel power and control, which gets to the root of all misbehavior, right? All misbehavior is attention, power, control, competence, belonging, a combination of those five. And when you make people in general feel empowered, and I think it's probably done from the top down for you, even like you feel empowered at that school, like you kind of went in there and you can kind of create programs and systems how you see fit. And it makes you want to work harder for the people above you. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And if you're going to have a rule, you got to be able to explain it. That's what I say to my teachers, you know, and that's what I say to we have a team, you know, of teachers here at the building level that they're called special ops, the special operations. So if we're going to have a routine in this building of how you enter the school, because, you know, you have to have special routines at elementary school for those things, or what we're going to do at recess, it has to make sense. And you have to be able to explain why, because there's always those kids who want to know why, but there's also those adults and parents, teachers, whomever. Okay, we've got this rule in place. Why is it here?
What is a special ops? Wait, you got to slow back, because I used to mention that and you glossed over it. What is that?
I have a team of teachers. So there's one from every grade level and then also the specials teachers. And they are a group and we call them the special ops team. So special operations. And they are the liaisons between their team and this committee. And they help make the decisions on the routines. You know, what is our expectations in the hallways of kids? What's our expectations when they enter the building in the morning or after recess? What is the expectation of when the snow starts to fall?
Yeah.
Snow pants or no snow pants? You know, I mean, those kind of things, they make those decisions. And then,
or more importantly, if they forget snow pants, do we give them snow pants or not?
Right.
Do we give a kid a pencil or not? That's always like a big debate on social media.
Yeah. Yes. And yeah, I listen
to your extra snow pants in the school. Probably. Right. Oh,
yeah, we tons definitely do. Well, you do. And in other buildings, you have to even more than ours, you know, but, sure. Yeah, we, you know, borrow hats or, you know, you have to be careful with, yeah. You know,
I know.
With lice or with other things.
I don't have to be careful. It's one of the great things about being bald. You never have to worry about that stuff.
You're never going to get that. Yeah, because even in the best schools.
Well, the amount of hotels that I sleep in, I would be actually afraid to do my job if I wasn't bald. Because, yeah. I mean, who, Lord knows. I mean, I've seen those Dateline specials where they go to the hotels and they put like the neon light on the, forget about that. I try to not even think about it if possible. But I know it can't stick to me, so it's kind of all good.
There you go, huh? You know. For sure.
All right, listen, I want to do a question with you. This question, I know I sent it to you, but I just want to, this is a good one that I got, and I thought you'd be the perfect person to help. So let me read this, and we'll go from there. Sound good?
Yep.
Okay. It says, I teach second grade, and I have one student who I just don't know what to do with. I've dealt with much more overall at my old school, but this one is just really tough. This child craves attention, and she knows that. She will tell you she does what she does for attention. She doesn't care if it's good or bad attention as long as she gets it. Her home life is bad, so her previous teachers really babied her, but I don't feel the need to do that. She's getting older, and she knows my procedures and expectations and goes against them anyways. I think this is going to get into more, including her more in power and control, like what we were just literally talking about, but let me finish. Her older brother does not have any behavior issues and is a great student. I have him for fourth grade. On Friday, my principal suggested that I ignore everything she does. I tried, but that didn't work as well, and things even got worse. She interrupted other students as they were taking their tests, ran in the room and hallways. She fell out of her seat at least 5 times, did not complete her work all within an hour. I want her to behave like I know she can because it's not fair when other students get in trouble for the things she does and she doesn't get in trouble. I don't understand that. Her main problem is blurting out at random times. So it's all attention driven and random things. I've tried to let her write me notes and blurt chart. She will have to be put on a behavior chart if I can't fix this. Okay. So yeah, it's a lot, but what do you say to that?
Well, first of all, a behavior chart isn't a bad thing. I mean, you know, I mean, I individual when it's needed.
Correct.
And used in a positive way. I am not a fan of anything, you know, and we've had the conversations more than one time. I do not believe in public humiliation of kids or adults either for that matter, but we do not put kids' names up on the board.
If that happened, then they would be putting your name up on the board all the time. Cause you'd be like the biggest and big, more trouble.
They did. Right. But I remember when I was in second grade and we lived in Billings and we moved to Billings, Montana. My mom was working nights. My dad was back here helping, you know, on the other side of South Dakota on the family farm. And my name got written on the board because I hadn't turned in a permission slip for something. But my mom left home before we got home from school. And so we were in second, third, and fifth grade. My sister was a fifth grader and she was taking care of us. And my mom would get home after we were already in bed. And so I remember after my name being there, and then when I didn't have the note the second day, then I got a check mark and I was staying in for recess. And because I didn't have my mom's signature, well, then I just did what a resourceful second grader would do. I signed my mom's name. So you think that a second grade signature is going to look like it? No. So then I got in even more trouble. And the thing was, is that it wasn't that my mom didn't care. It wasn't that my mom was out doing something she shouldn't have been doing. My mom was at work and we were doing the best that we could.
Yeah.
And I didn't, I'm sure I've thought of a million and one ways I could have gotten that sign now, but not, yeah. I didn't then. And she didn't know that it was important and all of those kind of things. And so I hate public humiliation because my name was written on a board a lot, you know, and I know you felt the same thing, but I have found a small, discreet little behavior chart on a desk where you know, maybe it's laminated and you just write a little mark or you put a little sticker on there that, and when a child earns 5 of them, they get 5 minutes of whatever they like. Maybe it's 5 minutes of Lego time. I get 5 minutes where I want to work with the teacher. It is whatever the kid wants.
Yeah.
It can't be what the teacher wants. It has to be what the kid wants, and it doesn't have to have any monetary value to it at all.
I think so. Okay. So to respond to her question, I think she needs to look in a different direction. Like,
yeah.
Okay. A lot of what I read in that question was the kid's not doing this, the kid's not doing that, the kid's not doing this, the kid's not doing that, but the kid didn't do this. And then the kid didn't do that. And I'm not, I want to be clear. Like, I'm not criticizing the teacher. I feel yep. the frustration and I understand the frustration, but I think you need to stop worrying about what she's not doing and focus on some things that she is doing. Mm-hmm. Like, it's really easy to find the negative a lot of the time. And to every negative, there's a positive if you choose to look for it, but you have to decide to look for it. You have to consciously walk in and say, this kid talks nonstop. Okay, I'm gonna view this kid, work with him on his skills instead of he's annoying because he talks all the time, right? So you got to go in with that mindset. And the other thing that I would do is, this kid is obviously craving attention to me, like, mm-hmm. like just that. And that's why ignoring it didn't work. Surprise me that ignoring it didn't work, because when you're craving attention, ignoring only works for a certain amount of time. And what you, if you're going to ignore, what you have to do is you have to ignore for a very short amount of time. And it has to be, you got to catch at least 1 or 2 seconds or 3 seconds where the kid's being appropriate. And then you got to run over to them and shower them with praise. Great job. Yeah. Great job. Great job. I'm so proud of you. Right. Because you got to give them that attention.
Yep.
But I wouldn't focus there if I was her in that direction. What I would focus on is I'll give her a specific thing that I would do if I was her administrator. I would say from this moment forward, and I've mentioned this on my podcast before, you have to spend at least 5 minutes extra a day with that kid. One-on-one when you're not required to be with her. So you pull her out of lunch, you pull her out of specials, you pull her out of here. I'll take over your class. I'm your administrator. I'll take over your class for 20 minutes. You go with this kid and you have to build a relationship like you've never built it before. Because this is a kid who, when you get her on your side, she'll be loyal to you.
Absolutely.
You have to get her on your side. And right now you're battling her. You don't want to battle with her. The mindset is, and I said this last week when I was talking with Freddie, the principal, the assistant principal in Phoenix, I said, the mindset has to be that I need the kid more than the kid needs me. This kid is already controlling the rest of my class. How can I go about connecting with her in a way that gets her to say, I would never dare disrespect Mr. Mendler because I care about him that much. And the mindset isn't about getting him to do her to do the work. It's about getting her to care about you so much. When you walk into your classroom, your mindset has to be, my goal right now is for this kid to care about me a ton. Not that she does her math or her science or her social studies. That's all going to come. That's all part of it. And it's going to come down the line. But it's only going to come when the kid decides that they want to learn from her. They have to walk in consciously saying, I respect Ms. Vick so much that I'm not going to mess around today. Not only am I not going to mess around, but I'll tell everyone else to be quiet. That's how much I respect that lady. And I'm asking this teacher, what have you done? What have you done to make that what she feels about you? And that's where you start. And the other good thing, I'll get to you. I know you're chomping, so I'm going to get to you. Let me finish. The other good thing about this is this focuses you on yourself instead of on the kid. It's too easy to focus on children. It's much easier to focus on yourself. And when you focus on yourself and you focus on really changing the things in your life around you, that will change all the people around you. So focus on changing your expectations, what you're trying to accomplish. And when you change that, it will ripple effect. It will change her in the process. And if nothing else, you will be in control. That's my answer.
I would agree with that 100%. Relationships are the number one thing. And you've said that over and over again. You call people out from you're taking the punishing mode and punishing isn't working. Let's try the positive. That's the definition of insanity by Albert Einstein, right? If you're doing the same thing you've always done and expecting different results, it's not going to happen. So I was just in the classroom this morning. We were doing
partners.
A learning walk.
You need to be partners with that kid. Absolutely. That kid and you need to be partners. You need to view it as I'm the head coach, but he's my first assistant. He's not some schlep on the bench. She's my first assistant. And my first assistant is almost as valued as I am. In fact, to the public, they're actually more valued than I am. I need them again. Like, you're in here doing this podcast right now. You got a person out in that hallway or wherever that the mindset is, that person is number one. And that has to be the mindset in the classroom with teacher and kid.
Yeah. Well, and get the kids, like, if she wants to be out of her seat, are there little things that you can have her do? Like, we've got, I have just a simple suggestion to one teacher. Have this little boy be the one that take the lunch cards down to the cafeteria every morning. It gets him up. He feels empowered. He goes, the next half hour, now all of a sudden he's on task. If something needs to be turned, you know, handed out, just make sure that happens. You know, we were just in a classroom today.
Good.
Okay. We were in a classroom this morning where a kid was clicking his markers, and it was a first grade classroom. You'd think that'd be really distractible, right? Nope. Everybody else was sitting on the floor focused on the teacher. And I had a second grade teacher with me, and she said, I was absolutely amazed. I always wonder when I'm up doing a lesson and I've got the kids in front of me and there's that one kid over there rolling around on the floor, does it bother the kids? And she said, to sit in the back of the room today and watch that no kid cared. They're so used to him, even though it's only, you know, day 23 of school or whatever, they're so used to him. They're focused on the teacher and they're learning. And you know what? That kid that's rolling around, when the teacher drew his name out to answer a question, he could answer it. And he answered it correctly because he's moving his body to keep his brain focused. I think you and I both can relate to that pretty well.
Bill Gates. I was just watching a documentary the other night on Bill Gates they were talking about how when he learns, he almost always has to be walking. He's constantly pacing back and forth. And literally that's a lot of times when he gets his best ideas. So there's no question that I think a lot of the research shows that that's true. Listen, I could talk to you for a lot longer, but 45 minutes is kind of our max. So I want to tell you, thank you as always. It's great. I love learning from you. I can't wait to come back and see your school again.
All right. That's soon. You're coming back in November. So
I will. I'll be back in November. That's true. Those are the ones that's open to everybody. So hopefully we'll get together and we're definitely going to do lunch. Correct?
Correct.
All right. So before I go, I got a shout out. So last week I forgot to shout out all the places that I was, and some people get mad at me for that. So 2 weeks ago, thank you guys to everyone in Sterling, Colorado. You guys were amazing, especially Mike Holloway. Thanks for bringing me in. Everybody in Stockton, California, Troy Brown. So Trace, this guy, Troy Brown, who was the assistant superintendent, brought me in Stockton, California. And when he introduced me, he told a story that was, he said, you know, I'm going to get to Brian in a second, but I want to remind you guys of why I do this job. And he told the story about when he was a teacher full time. He taught junior high, and he was on this kid's case about not doing his work. And the kid kind of lost it on him one day and was like, just so you know, I'll never forget the image of my father murdering my mother. And he's like, this young man, he goes, I was on his case about him not doing his work. And he hits me with like a sledgehammer that he watched with his own eyes, his father murder his mother. And he said to the people, and I mean, I was getting prepared and I stopped and he looked at the audience and he said, you know, today's going to be a reminder and why we do this job and what we're here for and at the end of the day, what really matters, which is making kids feel good about themselves and making them feel valued and making them feel respected. And even I say this all the time, it's easy to be respectful to respectful people. Like anybody can do that. The question is, can you be respectful to disrespectful people? And I think that's the true sign of character, is being able to be respectful to disrespectful people. So thank you to everyone in Stockton. It was a great place. I appreciate everybody. You guys, thank you for listening. Please make sure that you rate, you subscribe, you download, you tell all your friends, you tweet, you retweet. Send me your questions, either preferably on Instagram private messenger or on Twitter private messenger. You could also do Facebook, any of the three. I will take them. I will read them in the future. Tracy, we're going to do one more bonus segment real quick. Have you heard of Menler U? You probably have not heard of it yet.
I have.
You have heard of Menler U. Very good. So Menler U is my paid subscription service. It costs $5 a month. It's got over 60 videos now. And every person that I bring on my podcast, when we finish the podcast, we're going to do a quick, like one or two more questions. It's usually 5 to 6 minutes. It's the best. People are spending like $500 on professional development. And I'm saying $5 a month and you can get this, right? So come on, you got to admit, that's not a bad price, right?
That's a great price.
All right, guys. I appreciate you all listening. Until next week, I say peace. I'm out of here.